When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
One ride, the Alpine Slide alone, would be responsible for injuring hundreds of people a day.
Welcome to episode 65 of The Great Fail, a podcast that examines the greatest success stories and their spectacular fails. What led to the demise of the most prolific people, brands, and companies. I am your host, Deborah Chen, and this week we'll be looking at the infamous theme park from the 80s and 90s, Action Park. In the summer of 1980, hundreds of patrons swarmed to get in line for one of the biggest attractions at New Jersey's Action Park. The attraction that everyone was eagerly awaiting to get on was Alpine Slide, a 2,700-foot-long exhilarating ride that featured a wheel cart sled that would go down a long ramp track made out of fiberglass and cement. Those who dared would take a ski lift up to the top of the mountain where they were confronted with photographs of injured kids, a reminder to keep body parts inside the cart at all times. Most of those in line were fully aware that it was a ride at your own risk with reported rug burns from head to toe, hence its nickname, the Skin Ripper. But those who made it out unscathed or slightly injured had badges of honor, scabs to show for it. One particular rider was 19-year-old New Jersey teenager George Larson Jr., who wasn't much of a thrill seeker, but on that fateful day in 1980, had decided to join his friends and head to the infamous park. Seated in the bright yellow sled, he began his trip down the ramp, initially gaining speed. However, he would soon realize that his brakes were locked and ineffective. Desperate to slow down, George implored his body to try and create a natural brake, but in that critical moment, tragedy struck, causing him to lose control of his sled, catapulting him off the track, propelling his body 25 feet into the air before landing in an embankment, where he struck his head against a rock. That would be the last time Larson was seen alive, and there would be many more tragedies that later come out of Action Park, its rides resulting in more injuries and more deaths in the years to come, leaving many wondering how and why Action Park would continue operating so many years without any repercussions. Welcome to the story of Action Park, making its first splash in 1978, drowned in debt by 1996. This one's a nostalgic one for me. I mean, who doesn't love water parks? Growing up on the East Coast in the 80s and 90s and being from Queens, New York, just a short 45 minutes away from Vernon, New Jersey, I totally remembered Action Park being a thing. I wasn't a teenager yet, but I remember my friends that had older siblings who would talk about heading there, the fun water park where all the cool teenagers would hang out, with unbelievable rides and adventures like the Tarzan swing and the incredible wave pool. And when school let out for the summer, like clockwork, the ads would pop up as a reminder that Not So Far Away and Closer Than Six Flags Great Adventure was a much more affordable version of the park that was packed with these fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants rides. Now, the story wouldn't be complete without understanding the time period. So picture this. It's 1978. Jimmy Carter was our 39th president. the Dallas Cowboys defeated the Denver Broncos to win the Super Bowl. The first ever Home Depot opens up in Marietta, Georgia. Serial killer Ted Bundy is finally captured and arrested. Garfield was on its way to become the most widely syndicated comic strip made. And while hair is getting bigger and bigger, the music's getting louder and louder with the release of Grease, starring the New Jersey-born actor John Travolta. New Jersey was also erecting its first casino in Atlantic City with the opening of Resorts International. And not far, someone else was making bets. A visionary entrepreneur named Eugene Mulvihill, who had an idea for an amusement park that would be a mecca for adventure seekers. Vernon, New Jersey was up and coming, and they had recently opened up a Playboy Club and tourist-friendly ski resorts. And so this place was ripe with opportunities for investors looking to monetize off that area. By the 1980s, Action Park had become a prime destination in the summer, especially the weekends, for many in the tri-state area, drawing in money from New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Mulvihill envisioned transforming the grounds of the former Great Gorge Ski Resort into his, quote, Disney of Jersey, a pioneering move that would turn it into one of the most modern American water parks. And that concept held great promise. But what it delivered were poorly designed rides, underage and undertrained staff, paired with free-flowing alcohol. In 2020, HBO released a documentary on Action Park, ironically titled Class Action Park, directed by Seth Porges. Here, he talks about what led him to revisit the story in all of its glory.
I went to Action Park a couple times as a kid, and it really sat around in my head. You know, you don't really forget that. And I think what really set me on the journey to making Class Action Park was honestly an attempt to fact check my own memories. Like, I had these memories of insane and wild rides that didn't really make sense. And I really, as I got older, it didn't really fit into my adult notion of what reality is. And I began to doubt, like, did I actually see that? Did I actually experience that? Or was that something I picked up from The Simpsons or from like a comic book or from some movie? And the need to kind of really come to terms with my own memories and figure out if they were real is really what set me on this journey.
Over its 18-year existence, Action Park recorded a staggering toll of at least 6 deaths and hundreds upon hundreds of injuries. As almost anyone could guess now, what unfolded next was a surge of lawsuits. What might be more surprising is the insurance fraud, the clandestine money laundering operation, or the tenacity of the park's leader who refused to relinquish control, cementing Action Park's notoriety as a perilous and unforgettable chapter in amusement park history. Action Park began rather humbly with 2 water slides and a race car track. Due to its popularity, the park expanded its offerings to include go-karts, race cars, bumper boats, and a colossal wave pool, one of the first in the country. In the end, the park boasted around 75 rides, with 40 of them being water slides. But the excitement wasn't so much what was in the park. It was how you felt entering it, like you were the star of your own action movie. Mulvihill wanted his visitors to be like authors of their own adventure, implying that guests would be at the center of the action at all times. This means, at least in his mind, that the choice to accept the rides was inherent in riding these untested attractions.
From the moment you walk through the gates of Action Park, you realize this place is not like Disneyland. This place is not like Six Flags. The very first thing you see is this gigantic loop-de-loop water slide. And it doesn't seem to make any sort of physical sense. Like, how are people going in one end and actually making it out the other? And those sorts of things. Like, you get older and you get this question, like, was that ride real or something that I drew in the margins of a notebook when I was in second grade, right? And I just remember this sense of chaos and violence. But when you're a kid, and we went to a lot of amusement parks when I was a kid, my family would go to them all the time, you have a hard time, I think, distinguishing between what's actually dangerous and what is sort of the narrative of danger in service of a thrill. When you go on a roller coaster, it's designed to simulate the feeling of danger, but you're actually safe. When you go into like the Haunted Mansion at Disney World, it's supposed to simulate the feeling of ghosts and spookiness and threat, but you're actually safe. At Action Park, what made the place like so unique was that it wasn't simulated. It actually was dangerous. And I think as a kid, you have a really hard time distinguishing between the two.
This would eventually become the epitome of the action park ethos, wherein the responsibility and any ensuing consequences rested on the riders, not the operator. And so Action Park cultivated a legend akin to a campfire tale of a choose-your-own-adventure land. Except it wasn't just designed to seem unsafe. It actually was unsafe. Park staff would rescue struggling swimmers from the tumultuous water, and a nearby hospital sometimes reported treating 5 to 10 patients a day from Action Park. Some rides seemed to defy the law of physics and the limits of the human body, like the Cannonball Loop, which was the first water slide to go upside down. Mulvihill hired a team to build it. However, they were neither engineers nor amusement park experts. Using a dummy to test the slope, the head was actually ripped off mid-slide, a detail that would be a cause of concern for most rational people, but not Mulvihill. The ride remained open to the public despite guests exiting the loop with bleeding noses, cuts, and bruises. But that didn't slow the flow of eager visitors. In fact, it seemed to make the park even more appealing.
Gene was, in many ways, a really smart guy. He realized that people were drawn to danger, they were drawn to excitement, they were drawn to thrills, they were drawn to experiences they couldn't get anywhere else. Now, he gave people this experience in a way that actually could hurt them. But were somebody to come along and say, you know what, we want to tap into these same ideas, this sense of thrill, this feeling of danger, and do it in a way that's actually safe. There's something so compelling about that. You know, and people are, I think, often looking for authentic experiences. Unfortunately, the authenticity of Action Park lied in the fact that it could seriously hurt you, but people went there seeking that.
What Mulvihill's vision aimed to capitalize on was people's willingness to take risk and feel invincible. And it worked, because the more danger associated with Action Park, the more people were drawn to it, defying conventional wisdom. This counterintuitive attraction taps into a very human instinct, a tendency to be drawn to things that might not be entirely good for us.
What made Action Park so popular was the danger. The more people realized this place was dangerous, the more they wanted to go. And that, honestly, was... it's counterintuitive. It doesn't seem to make sense. We're like mobs running to a fire, right? But there's something very human, I think, about that experience. Like, for some reason, we as humans are drawn to things that aren't good for us. And that's one of the feelings I really wanted to unravel with this movie. Like, why was it that this place was so dangerous? Not despite its safety record, but in many ways because of its safety record. In addition, Action Park was a place where you could kind of do whatever you wanted. And if you're a 15-year-old or 16-year-old kid from New Jersey, that idea is like heaven, right? This idea of no parents telling you what to do. You can go down 4 at a time on the slide. You can get drunk. You can get into fights. It was like the Purge, right? Like, there were no rules. And to teenagers, especially teenagers in the 80s and 90s, that's a really alluring concept.
The park was a teenage haven where there were no rules and very little supervision, particularly for young adults in the 80s and 90s. This was a time when the movie The Breakfast Club romanticized the tension in a whole genre of teen films like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, painted portraits of exciting adventures for those who can sneak away from parental oversight for a few hours. Mulvihill's calculated approach successfully tapped into the allure of risk-taking and invincibility in a way that resonated with this generation.
The park earned nicknames such as Class Action Park, what we call the film, but also Action Park, Traction Park, and earned it for good reasons. There were a lot of people hurt there and some people killed there. According to one park employee in our film, on like a normal busy summer Saturday, one ride, the Alpine Slide alone, would be responsible for injuring hundreds of people a day, any single day. And that's just crazy to me, right? Like, this slide, this one ride on any given Saturday in the summer could have triple digits of injuries. It wasn't like a very small number or fringe or like outlier group of people were injured at this park. Most people, in many ways, a sizable percentage of people walked away with mostly minor, but yes, injuries. To the point where if I meet somebody today who went to Action Park and I ask them, did you get hurt? Do you have any scars? Do you have injuries? The chances are really good they will say yes and maybe even like show me their scars.
The park became a gathering place for unruly teenagers accompanied by underage drinking, inadequately trained operators, and unsafe rides, creating a recipe for disaster. there were a lot of red flags even from the beginning.
Action Park was one gigantic red flag, and they weren't even hiding it. They were waving that flag as proudly as they could. I mean, I remember being at the park and you'd just be in line hearing people like talk about how dangerous this place was. You'd hear these kind of urban legend stories in real time about some kid got stuck in that slide or somebody got decapitated on that one. You would just hear these things bubbling up in the air. You'd hear people calling it Accident Park or Traction Park or Class Action Park all around you. It wasn't a matter of like little red flags. The whole place was a gigantic banner that said you should probably stay away. But the more they wove that banner, the more people wanted to show up.
Except it wasn't just rumors. There were many fatalities that occurred, like when, in 1982, a 27-year-old flipped on a kayak ride and came into contact with a live electrical wire that was submerged underwater. He suffered a severe electrical shock, which sent him into cardiac arrest. That same year, a 15-year-old drowned in the tidal wave pool. And in 1984, a man suffered a fatal heart attack on the Tarzan swing, believed to be triggered by the shock of the freezing water. The water in the swimming area was around 50 degrees, while other water areas were around 70 to 80 degrees. These were just some of the casualties.
The owner, Gene Mulvihill, he realized that people were drawn to this danger. He realized that the more newspaper articles were out there about people getting hurt, the more people showed up at the park, right? He realized all of this. The park itself was involved with all sorts of, honestly, criminal enterprises. It was involved with money laundering. They had a fake insurance company based in the Cayman Islands, so they wouldn't have to pay insurance premiums. But the way the park operated, it wasn't just about not wanting to pay insurance premiums as a way of saving money. Gene, the owner of the park, he was this guy who, if somebody told him to do something, he wanted to make a point. He wanted to do the opposite, just to show you kind of who was in control. So when he created this fake insurance company, yes, he saved some money by not having to pay insurance premiums, but really for him, it was almost like this ideological stand, this idea that people were forcing him to have insurance. He didn't want that. He wanted to prove that he could get away with doing things his own way.
Following the death of George Larson Jr. in 1982, Mulvihill actually lied to the reporters and told them that he was an employee because a customer's death would have been reported to the state and would elicit a lot more speculation, further proof that he knew just how to work the system. But lying to reporters were just the tip of the iceberg. The park's fortunes began to turn during the summer of 1984 when more deaths were reported, which led to legal and financial problems that stemmed from lawsuits. When legal issues started rolling in, Mulvihill pushed back and made his argument that the attendees were responsible for their own injuries and came up with his own solution to avoid paying out insurance settlements. He founded a fake insurance company that he called London and World Assurance Inc., which was at the heart of the money laundering scheme. The jig was up when the state investigation of misconduct at Action Park led to a 100-count jury indictment against the park and its executives for operating a fake insurance company. Mulvihill pleaded guilty.
The park was never, at no point did somebody say, this place is too dangerous, you're shutting down. That's not why the park closed. The park closed because of bankruptcy, right? There was no, I mean, times were changing too. Like the 80s were gone, the 90s were just a different time. But at no point did some, you know, regulator or authority figure say, that's it, we're closing this place down. You know, it was money issues that ended up shutting down the park.
The financial disaster forced the park to close some of its main attractions and the company began to dismantle due to the costly settlements. The impact was made worse by the onset of the recession, which caused a drop in the number of visitors to Action Park. By 1996, burdened with $14 million in debt, Action Park was forced to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. It finally closed its door, sealing the deal on one of the most memorable, infamous amusement parks of its time.
The story of Action Park and the story of its founder, Gene Mulvihill, is in many ways a story about how people get away with things in this country, right? If you steamroll through things, I mean, these people get away with things, right? I think Gene realized quite early that the wheels of regulation, the wheels of oversight, they move pretty slowly. And if you just keep moving and moving and moving, you can outrun them in many ways. If he was required to have insurance for a season, at the end of the season, they'd be like, oh, we realize you don't have insurance. He'd be like, well, what are you going to do about it? The season's over. and then he did the same thing the following season, right? Like, he realized that just, yeah, the wheels of regulation, the wheels of oversight move slowly. And I think in many ways, we're seeing this kind of play out in the present day. You know, people get away with things because the levers of justice are just very slow and often unwieldy and can be manipulated.
In the early 80s, when amusement parks were still relatively new, there was a huge lack in safety regulations. And in that gap, Mulvihill found an opportunity to work it. A lack in regulations to him seemed to mean a lack in liability, a lack in responsibility for the safety of his visitors. He chose instead to push on the assumption of risk onto the people who trusted that a popular amusement park wasn't out to hurt, or worse, kill them. The story of Action Park and its founder, Eugene Mulvihill, unfolds a narrative about exploiting the gaps in oversight and regulation. It serves as a stark reminder of how people in certain circumstances, individuals with knowledge and cunning, can maneuver through loopholes of the system. Mulvihill's ability to navigate the slow-moving wheels of consumer protection law, or law in general, really, reflects a broader lesson about the challenges inherent in maintaining effective oversight and justice. This tale continues to echo in the present day, underscoring the importance of vigilance in the way that law protects consumers in the face of new technologies or risky products, as well as ensuring that businesses and business owners may actually be held accountable for harm that comes to their consumers as a result of company negligence or recklessness. The legacy of Action Park is an extreme, but all too real example of how companies can put their own consumers at risk and go unchecked for far too long. It's a reminder that as a collective, consumers should learn from the past and that we can all advocate and work for oversight and regulations that actually protect the well-being and safety of the public.
Because Action Park came out during the darkest days of the pandemic, and it really, I think, struck a nerve because the movie ended up being about this big question that we're all grappling with as a society, which is sort of the balance or the blurry lines between personal freedom and societal responsibility. And, you know, I think different people can watch Action Park and come away, honestly, with very different conclusions about who the heroes are, who the villains are. Was this place net good? Was this place net bad? Whatever it might be. And I think this is a question we will always grapple with as a society. So much of economics is based on this idea that people are logical and rational and capable of making these, you know, decisions based on what actually is good for them. And I think Action Park just dismantles that so quickly, so heavily, this idea that people are rational. Action Park is all about us being irrational creatures, and we are. We're emotional creatures. We want to do things we shouldn't do, oftentimes because we shouldn't do them. And I think people oftentimes forget that. And I think that we do so at our own risk.
Special thanks to director and filmmaker Seth Porges for his contributions to this episode and sharing his insights from his HBO documentary, Class Action Park. And thank you for tuning in this week to The Great Fail, a program that spotlights some of the most infamous case studies of failed businesses, brands, and ideas, and goes beyond that to garner lessons and wisdom so that we all can learn from the greatest mistakes. The research on each episode is extensive, but none of these episodes would be possible without the tireless efforts of researchers, writers, and reporters. They are all credited on thegreatfail.com under our show notes. Connect with us at The Great Fail on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast so that we can continue bringing you more episodes. And remember, with great failure comes great liability.
I must confess, I did what I did, now my life's a mess.
Cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.